To celebrate summer, we're offering a free pair of flip-flops when you spend £35 on clothing, shoes, accessories or beauty at M&S. Free those toes and strut into the sunshine. But hurry, this offer ends 4th of July. Only M&S. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply, subject to availability. See selected stores and online for details.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocked the dunk! Here's Wade to get screen. Eurostep. Basket. And a foul.
Welcome to the Heat Check. My name is Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Seems like we just did one of these.
I think that seems accurate. Yeah, it seems vaguely familiar, but, you know, as always, we love to be able to talk about Miami Heat basketball.
This is the second part, the second episode of a five-part series. If you missed the center part of the position study series that David and I are doing, you can go back
shame
and
on
to
you.
That. Shame on you. Shame. Shame.
Shame.
Shame. Walk
shave
of
your hair
you.
And walk naked through the streets of Westeros.
And then after you do that, listen to this one. Or you can listen to this one first and then go back to center. I guess there's no rules here. This is basically Marine. We can just keep this metaphor going. We're going to talk about power forward this episode, which is a fun one. It's also, you know, kind of complicated because of the whole Chris Bosh situation, but we might as well just jump into it, right?
Absolutely.
So we'll start with a review of last season, get into some contract offseason stuff, and then just a future outlook of the season. So Chris Bosh was a starter, you know, in the beginning of the year.
Yes.
Josh McRoberts was his primary backup. There was a guy by the name of Jarnell Stokes on the roster at that point. He was involved in a trade to the Pelicans and then was waived and then got signed by the Grizzlies and then was like there for a little while, but I don't really know what happened to him. And then
he led the D League team to a championship is what he did.
He was an MVP.
That's
D League MVP Jarnell Stokes. Recently, I can't remember who said it or what, but word came out that the Heat were high on. Oh, it was our friend Cody Taylor of Basketball Insiders said that he was interviewing Stokes, and Stokes mentioned that the Heat were high on him, but had to get rid of him as part of that salary dump situation. So, I don't know. They obviously brought him back for the Skyforce. Who knows if he might make an appearance again with the Heat later on in his future. But also, Luol Deng started the season as a starting small forward, but once Bosh left after the All-Star break due to his recurring blood clot situation, the Heat slid him over to power forward, so we're going to talk about Luol Deng as a power forward, you know, just because, but obviously everything that comes with Luol Deng involves that kind of transition from small forward to power forward in the season. But even he said that he liked playing power forward a little bit more, and at this point in his career, how the NBA is, you know, how basketball is being played right now in the NBA, he views himself more as a stretch four type guy, so... Overall, your thoughts on the power forward position? Quite a rocky position for the Heat this season.
And I think it shows that the team's adaptability. I think it shows, you know, the strength of Eric Spoelstra. You know, as we've talked about in the past, the fact that he was able to make the team adapt with the loss of Bosh and with the changing role from Deng, it was an important one. I think. It's still a very important position. You wonder now whether or not with Chris Bosh being, you know, going through what he's going through injury wise, whether or not if he does come back in the future, whether or not it's better for him to revert to his role of power forward, which he played for most of his tenure in Toronto and for some of his tenure here in Miami as well, or whether or not it's better for him to move up to the center position, which is what he played for the most part during the Big Three era. So, you know, there's a lot of questions there. It certainly seems to be a focus there. You know, the stretch four has been around for some time. Obviously, it's been a focus for many teams, but you look at the power forward position. I think it's most important in that it represents the biggest amount of change. It's what you're looking for as your most versatile position. It's why a guy like Draymond Green has been able to thrive as much as he has in Golden State, because it's not just it's not just being a burly rebounder the way it was in the 90s, maybe early 2000s. Maybe not just a guy who can knock down a 15-foot jump shot like Udonis Haslam at the start of his career. It's somebody who can run the floor, who can shoot from the perimeter, who could put the ball down and dribble and create his own offense. Those are the kinds of things. You look at a guy even like Serge Ibaka, and as good of a three-point shooter as he is, he doesn't initiate the offense. He doesn't do much other than just catch and shoot. And, you know, obviously he does, he has an impact defensively, but you look at a guy like Green or even Chris Bosh, and they're clearly much more versatile defenders and offensive players. And that's really where the value of the position comes into play.
We're, I mean, it's crazy, but the Heat won their first championship in 2006 with Udonis Haslam and Shaquille O'Neal as its front line, right?
But they also had a guy named Antoine Walker who could slide over the power four position.
That's true.
And you could argue that he probably was one of those progenitors of the stretch four, a guy who, you know, could shimmy past the three-point line and give them an added sense of versatility. Because you had, I'm drawing a blank now, goddammit, what's his name, the small forward, Posey. James Posey at the three, who could provide, again, even he probably defended a lot of power forwards too. Yep. You know, he was
Posey,
a guy who could
Posey's game would hold up in today's NBA.
Absolutely, absolutely. A guy who could, you know, play both forward positions. He played some guard early in his career. He knocked down the three-point shot. I mean, versatile defender. And Antoine was a versatile offensive player who could play both forward positions. So I'd say that either one of them might have been able to function in today's league.
We really don't appreciate Antoine Walker's career enough, do we?
I mean, I love him, to be honest with you. I thought he was great fun to watch. And yeah. I was depressed to read about him and what happened to him after he left the league and making not even minimum wage in what was the early years of the D League. So, I mean, I wish for nothing but the best for him, and I think a lot of Heat fans feel the same way.
He didn't play power forward for the Heat this year, though. Unfortunately, the Heat could have used somebody like him, I guess. But
Shooting fours from all over the place.
But Chris Bosh, you bring up an interesting point. Do you want to play him at power forward? Do you want to play him at center? I mean, I think in today's NBA, if you're starting a team from scratch and you're handed Chris Bosh, you play him at center. But when you also have somebody like Hassan Whiteside, who we talked about on the center preview at length, but if you have a guy who's probably going to come back, or the Heat want back, then they're projecting Bosh as a power forward. Because as much as I've said that I love to see Whiteside coming off the bench, and you know, in a perfect world where salaries don't matter and whatever, and you could pay a bench player $20 million, I like the idea of Bosh starting at the five and Whiteside coming off the bench behind him and leveraging a bench unit around him, but that's just not realistic. It's not what's going to happen. So if all the pieces fall into place the way the Heat want them to, and Bosh is able to play in 2016-17, then he's playing power forward next to Whiteside. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to... I think part of the thing that you love about Bosh is his versatility, like you said. So there will be situations where Whiteside comes out and Bosh slides over to center, and now you have this pace and space type unit that could resemble something like what the Big Three had. That's something that can happen. I mean, if you stagger their minutes, you can have a lot of different looks, which is pretty cool. If you think, like, if you're projecting what the Heat can do, that would be a pretty interesting way to kind of go. You could go from really big to going small. I mean, you can match up with a lot of different types of teams that way. That could be the best case scenario for the Heat.
Now, I'm thinking obviously the goal is, as always, the championship, and you expect that Golden State is going to be, a title contender, barring any injury. I know they're liable to lose Harrison Barnes. I don't think it's likely that they can bring him back at what his contract demands will be. But you look at the team that probably or arguably challenged them the most this year, and that was Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Finals. And part of the advantage that they had was not just a supreme talent and a guy like Kevin Durant, but also the fact that their size between Ibaka, Steven Adams, and Enes Kanter really challenged the small ball lineups for the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
And you wonder if Miami can duplicate that somehow. And maybe, and we've never talked about this before, and I was just thinking about it right now, is it possible that a guy like Chris Bosh, who has done so much in his tenure in Miami and has changed and adapted as much as he has and always been willing to do whatever the team asks him to do, what if he's the one who comes off the bench?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we've never discussed that possibility, but given his, assuming he comes back at all, and that's obviously the biggest question, If he comes back, is he a guy who might be willing to accept a bench role, knowing that, you know, his time, whatever time he gets on top of, you know, whatever time he plays throughout what's left of his career is kind of bonus time, considering the injury issues that he's gone through. He's playing on what you might want to call borrowed time. Maybe he'd be willing to accept a slightly lesser role. At this point, does it really matter? I mean, you know, the line between what a starter and a bench player is more blurred, I think, than ever. So long as you're out there in closing, maybe you could have other big lineups with him at power forward. But he could have him coming off the bench and being the backup center and adding a whole bunch of versatility to Miami's second unit, assuming you can either bring back a guy like Luol Deng who would be willing to start the power forward position, or perhaps a whale in the name of Kevin Durant who might be able to play at the four as well.
It's definitely interesting. Given the way that Bosch played in that first half of the season, you wonder if the Heat can play at a fast pace with Bosch on the floor as a forward.
Right.
Because they didn't. But also... Yeah. They did make a conscious decision to play faster and let Goran Dragic run the offense a little bit more after the All-Star break. So I don't know how much of that coincides with Bosch not being on the floor, how much of that coincides with Dragic taking more of a lead. There's a lot of factors involved in that, but I think it's something worth exploring. I mean, I like that Bosch is he's a knockdown three-point shooter. He can hit open threes. He's versatile. He passes the ball well. I mean, he does all those things that you would want out of a stretch four, somebody that could flank Hassan Whiteside, but he does tend to spend most of his time on the elbow. He does, which is a very good thing to have in a player, but you also don't want him being like Serge Ibaka or Kevin Love and just sitting on at the three-point line. You want to leverage his talent, so maybe the best way to do that is just to build a bench unit around him and see what he could do with it. It's certainly worth it's worth thinking about. I do like the comparison you made though to the Thunder with Enes Kanter and Steven Adams. Thank you, as that front line. But you know, you also have that Steven Adams, Serge Ibaka, which is their starting front line. And right. Like we've talked about, Bosch is a better version of Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka was like, the Thunder always wanted Ibaka to kind of turn into Bosch. That's why they asked him to turn into a 3-point shooter and learn how to shoot that. But he never quite got there. He never quite figured out how to put all the things together and be more than one thing at once. Bosch can do that. So I still think that with Bosch and Whiteside, if the Heat determine that they want to dominate the boards, but they also want to play fast, you will allow Bosch. Because remember, when Bosch was in, they didn't allow their forwards to push the ball up the floor. Bosch can do that. We have no doubt that Bosch can do that. It was until Deng walked in and then walked into that situation where they decided, we're going to push the ball, crash the glass, and then bring the ball up the floor. Don't look for a guard to give it to hand the ball off to.
Would you say that Deng was the beneficiary then of that faster pace?
Or absolutely.
Was it kind of like a split, maybe, that like he contributed to a faster pace, but it also happened to coincide with a time when, you know, Dragic was able to take the reins and kind of push that pace a little bit more?
I don't think they could have done that with just anybody. I think Deng allowed them to do that to a certain extent. But so, I think a lot of Miami's decision making and, you know, to do that, to push the pace and try to get the ball up the floor faster.
Right.
I mean, that was a lot. You want to leverage Bosch's talents in the half court in that triple threat position on the post, which you don't really use a lot in the fast break. But I also think, so in that way, Deng created that need to be like, the only way we're going to generate offense, because we don't have a do-it-all all-star like Bosch, is to just push the ball up the floor and just try to score really fast.
Right.
So in that way, yes. But that, I think that might be more due to his limitations, you know, in one way. I don't know. I think it all obviously all fits together in one weird puzzle. But I think that the Heat can play faster with Bosch. I'm not ready to say that they can't play faster with Bosch.
Yeah, it's tough to say that because, like, he does tend to hold the ball a lot, right? I should have those numbers in front of me, but I know whenever he's involved in a possession, he tends to hold the ball a little bit. You know, he faces up the basket, he faces an opponent, and then he either drives to the hoop or he, you know, dishes it out. He often puts up the mid-range shot. But he does slow things down a little bit. And he's capable of playing quicker. We know that. We've seen him
Yes.
swing the ball around. We've seen him be an active, you know, passer. but that's not necessarily what he's most comfortable with. I mean, maybe it's something he is comfortable with, but not most comfortable with.
And that's why we saw in the Big Three era, you know, Spoelstra had units where LeBron and Wade went to the bench and Bosch stayed out there, and then he's allowed to do that stuff.
Right.
So I think you just, as long as the lineups make sense and you play around and give everybody their moment, as long as you give everybody like their guitar solo, so to speak, mm-hmm. then they could just play along with the song for the rest of the game.
The challenge then is, you know, one, if he comes back, if he's healthy enough, if he's able to practice and give Spoelstra enough of a chance to find those lineups that work best, you know, because you obviously the team as currently structured is incomplete. You have too many questions as to whether or not you bring back Hassan Whiteside or Wade or somebody else. If you, you know, make trades, there's so much, you know, that you don't know about at this point in time. We can theorize as well as anyone, but we don't know how it's all going to work out until that those questions are answered. And there are so many of them, especially this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Chris Bosh is a big question mark, but the answer regardless is going to be the same. He's on the roster, and you have to act like he's going to play. Like if he does or doesn't is a whole other matter, but the Heat have to build this team as if he's on the roster, because he is. But then you have Josh McRoberts, who is on the hook for a little bit more than almost $6 million next season. The Heat, from every report and rumor, want to try to trade him in order to create more cap space to go after maybe something that they need a little bit more than a backup power forward. And Luol Deng is a free agent. So if they're able to trade McRoberts, now I don't know who's going to want McRoberts, but you know, with the spiked salary cap, which is projected at around $92 million, there's also a spiked salary floor. Maybe there's a team that wants to trade next to nothing or a minimum contract for Josh McRoberts. They feel like they can get something out of McRoberts, and they're willing to pay that almost $6 million for somebody like that. I don't know. And nobody thought that the Heat would be able to clear and get under the luxury cap line this offseason. They found some takers. So there's always, of the 29 other teams in the NBA, the Heat tend to find that one team that's willing to take on the contract that they're trying to get rid of. So I assume that they're able to get rid of McRoberts. And if we assume that, then the Heat are projected at around $10 million if they're able to move McRoberts. I mean, they're trying to move. Like, I don't know how much we could talk about McRoberts, because so much of it is predicated on, does another team want to trade for him?
Well, what teams have Miami had the most success making trades with in the past? I'd say Memphis. Right? Memphis is obviously one of the teams that they've made the most moves with. I mean, they traded Anderson. They traded, you know, Mario Chalmers. I know that they've done deals for draft picks in the past.
Yeah.
So you'd have to look at them as a potential option. And I've heard, I'm trying to think now, I think the Woj podcast, where he had a number of assistant GMs.
Yeah, yep.
And that was one of the points that they made, is that it's you know, you think just trade with this team and that team, but it's never quite that easy. It's not a snap decision and nothing happens instantaneously. What it is always a process of working on relationships that you've built slowly over time, people that you feel comfortable with, that you've worked with for months, maybe even as far back as years. So I know there's an existing relationship there between the Heat and Chris Wallace from the Memphis Grizzlies. So there's certainly an option there. And that's one of the few teams McRoberts hasn't played for. you'd also think that maybe if they're not able to sign Jeremy Lin, maybe Charlotte could possibly use him. And Steve Clifford did such a great job of maximizing McRoberts' skill set during the 1 year that he coached him in Charlotte, that you'd think that maybe he'd want him back there, and I'm sure he'd be welcome back. They have their own free agency issues, you know, with Al Jefferson and Nicholas Batum and others, so you never know exactly how it's going to work out. But and I'm sure there'll be other teams, and the thing is that, you know, he seems to be healthy enough. Maybe he didn't quite fit into what Miami was able to do. He always seemed, the injuries always seemed to take him out. He was part of the plan. And unfortunately, that plan seemed to have changed because of the loss of Bosch and his injury issues. But he never seemed to quite fit in Miami. And that was always unfortunate. I think you and I both were big advocates for him and his versatility. And we thought he was going to be a big part of the team moving forward, and just never worked out. Now, I had heard some scuttlebutt from reporters that, you know, Miami's culture of Heat, of basketball first, last and only, may have kind of left him out in the cold, that he wasn't you know, able to adapt, and that, you know, he was a guy who found joy in other things outside of just basketball, and that might necessarily not have worked in his favor with a team like Miami and with Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, who are both obviously uber dedicated to the sport. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he seemed to get along well with everyone. There didn't seem to be any obvious tension there. I think from a player perspective, he probably got along with his teammates and they probably appreciated what he did, but he was just limited. You know, the injuries cut into what he could do. And then when he was able to get on there, he seemed hesitant. You know, he wasn't quite flowing the way he was. He needed a confidence boost and he didn't always get it. And, you know, his minutes were going to be arbitrarily assigned to him. So it was never a comfortable situation for him. So personally, as much as I'd love to see him thrive in Miami, I don't think it's possible. I think even another offseason here with another rebuilt team, or with a team that's going to add a player here and there or subtract a player here and there, isn't going to benefit him. I think a new situation for him might be best.
I think you're right. Obviously, we're far away, a long time from the Hulk jersey rip moment that came within the first few games of him playing for the Heat. And yeah, I agree. I mean, we compared him to Boris Diaw, and the Heat, it's not a coincidence that the Heat signed him after they lost in the finals to the Spurs.
Right.
When Boris Diaw played such a major role in that, and he was supposed to play a similar role, and it just never worked out. So yeah, I think you're right.
He was gonna help create a more Spursy offense.
Yes, more Spursian type deal.
That's one of your best, I don't know what to call it, trademark phrases. I don't know. You've had a few between the Spoaching tree and Spursy. You've got quite a future there, my friend.
I'm like the jingle writer for NBA phrases.
You know, don't knock them. You know, you found yourself humming along to a few jingles here and there in your time, I'm sure.
I'm like Pusha T making that McDonald's jingle.
We're loving it. Keep up the good work.
Luol Deng, free agent. Obviously, a major impact on what he was doing in Miami, moving from small forward to power forward. And I've written it that you look at somebody that basically signed to replace LeBron James, ooh, and then within 2 years also replaced Chris Bosh, in one way or the other, in one sense or another.
That's versatility. Replaced
two Hall of Famers, two championship players. That is, like you said, versatility. And Heat fans should be very appreciative, and I think they are. Like, Luol Deng, I think it took him a little while to warm up to Heat fans, but
A year and a half,
but he moved over and he did it, and that's what worked. And he played spectacularly at the four. And we already talked about how much of that was him and how much was the situation. But regardless, he was the guy that did it. He played it well. He was exactly what the Heat needed at that time. And he's a free agent, and he earned himself a lot of money with how he played. And he had a great first round series against Charlotte too. Let's not forget about that. So
I can't see him making a lot of money. I know that the projections all are that he's going to be making 15 plus, but I can't see it. I mean,
think a team is going to look at him and how Miami used him and say, we need a stretch four. Let's bring that guy on.
Maybe, but I don't get that. It's hard to explain, and I know it sounds like utter BS, but I just don't get that feeling that somebody's going to drop $15 million on him.
Well, him in this salary cap?
I'd pay him exactly what he made over the last 2 years. I think giving him a 3-year, $10 million a year deal, 3 for $30 million, is more than fair. And I know he's probably at a point now with his age being, what, 32, 31, 32, where he probably want to cash in on a little bit more than that and for a longer. He'd probably want something like a 4-year deal, and that seems very unlikely. I mean, look, we don't know what to expect because the salary cap is liable to drive everybody batshit crazy, and that's, you know, a possibility. But you still have to use some kind of rationale there, right? I mean, not a few years ago, I don't think anybody really wanted Luol Deng. You know, I know he had his choice of teams, but the fact that he signed here for 2 years for $10 million a year at the time seemed like maybe even overpaying him. And I think part of the reason why he chose this was the 1-1 that he took with Miami. The fact that he had a chance to maybe fit into a pretty established basketball culture. But, you know, 2 years ago, he was overworked and inconsistent, and there were lingering injury issues. yes, he's more adaptable than maybe he had considered. Maybe he can slide over to that power forward position for a prolonged period of time. But, I mean, does a team – what teams need a starting power forward or a starting stretch four that is going to be able to pay him $15 million a year?
I don't know. But if you – you know, if, I think the – a couple things help him, obviously. The versatility that he showed going to the four and Andre Iguodala. And how he's played in Golden State, his ability to move around and unlock certain lineups, and you can kind of just put guys around him. Dang showed an ability to handle the ball. He can run pick and rolls in a weird way. He can hit open shots as well as Iguodala, if not better when he gets hot. You know, he's not the defender that Iguodala is, but he's got that reputation in the league. Like, we know he's not, but he definitely has that try hard on defense reputation. I think guys might look at him and be like, you know, the Warriors are trendy. We kind of want to try to duplicate what they have. There's not a lot of Iguodalas, but Luol Deng's like 60%, 70% of what Iguodala is.
Do you know what's crazy?
What?
Iguodala is over a year, almost a year and a half older than Deng.
That's wild.
I would not have thought that. I was thinking that Deng is like 2 years older than Iguodala.
Well, Deng's probably played a lot more playoff games.
Yeah, I guess you could say that between his tenure in Philadelphia and Denver. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't playing for a whole heck of a lot, but yeah, I guess more games overall. Actually, you know what? Let me look it up.
A lot more minutes because he was playing 50 minutes a game in Chicago.
No doubt about that. Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's see. Yeah. 32 and a half years old, and Deng is just over 31.
Yeah.
Let's see. No, he's played less games. He's played less games than Iguodala.
That's wild.
And less minutes. Am I missing something? Maybe I'm reading this wrong. But it looks like 29,000 minutes for Deng and 31,000 for Iguodala, which does not seem like... I mean, and you think about how Iguodala is able to, you know, adapt and play the role that he does. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine a world where...
I don't know.
Yeah. Minutes
but either plays. Way, it sounds like... From the reports, he's going to get paid some money. Even if he wanted to come back for $10 million, that's basically all the cap space that the Heat have. So chances are he walks, right? Like, unless he takes a small... There's always a possibility that he says, no, I like it in Miami. I'm sick of moving around. I bounced around with too many different teams after Chicago. I got a good thing going here. I'll re-sign for $6 million a year or whatever. Just give me 2 years or 3 years for $6 million a year, and I think the Heat would be like, "All right, it might suck 3 years from now, but we'll do that for the next couple of years. We'll bite the bullet in year three."
And the friendship of Goran Dragic was one of those storylines that towards the end of the season was, you know, that was comedy gold. It was perfect. Maybe that plays a factor. You'd like to think so. I mean,
it's the only way that the Heat are going to bring him back, right?
Yeah,
there's no way to know if he's going to do that. I think we should talk about some other options in that case. Some other free agent options that are going to be a little bit cheaper than Luol Deng if he walks.
All right.
For power forward. And I think one of the guys that's been mentioned a lot is Marvin Williams by myself and by Twitter sphere and rumors and stuff like that. I'm not sure that Marvin Williams is going to sign for less money than Luol Deng, though. I mean, he doesn't bring quite the same amount of versatility, I don't think. As far as maybe ball handling and just how many different positions he can defend.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, I think, a better three-point shooter. He's a little bit younger. He's a bit longer.
His performance in the playoffs didn't help, though.
He did not play well in the playoffs, no. I know I'm much higher on Marvin Williams than you are, and I think we've talked about Marvin Williams a couple times on this podcast, but...
You keep finding a way to bring him up.
Wes. I do. We don't have to talk about it that much. I'm kind of sick of talking. I've written about him, and I'm kind of sick of dealing with Marvin Williams. I'm starting to talk myself out of it, and I don't want to do that.
Look, man, I know you got that tattoo one night, and it's like you're trying to justify it to the listening audience, but it's time to move on. All right, buddy.
So, other options at power forward. I mean, it's kind of like if the Heat are looking for. I mean,
I think the Cavs are looking to unload Kevin Love, so maybe that's an option.
Well, here's the tricky thing here is, are they looking for a backup or are they looking for a starter?
And it all depends on Chris Bosh's health. Right?
Right, and they don't know. And so I think what you do is you look for guys that are versatile. There's always the option of, hey, if Bosh isn't playing, Justice Winslow could be our power forward. You know, it could be something like that. Or, I don't know, but Jared Dudley. I think either way, if you're able to trade McRoberts too, I mean, that impacts what you do. I think you definitely are looking for depth of some kind. Somebody that, like the Heat like to look for, you're probably playing a bench role, but be ready to start. Be ready to play heavy minutes.
Jared Dudley is a good option.
I like Jared Dudley. I mean, he could play anywhere between the 3 and 4. He could guard anything between 2 and 4. I think Dudley is one of the better options out there.
Yeah, I think so too.
I should have a list of people in front of me, but I don't.
Oh, I mean, there are a lot. Marvin Williams, Jared Dudley. I mean, and I guess you're right, though. It all depends on, given Miami's historical, you know, free agent, you know, acquisitions, they're going to bring in a veteran, right? They're not going to add depth through younger players, which is probably what they should do. I mean, I know a lot of Heat fans want Willie Reed back into play. Yeah. I think that's certainly a possibility. He did shine during Summer League, and I think he was hurt when he was playing for Brooklyn, but he's a restricted free agent, and I don't know if Brooklyn intends to sign him. I'm sure that they would. Sean Marks, the new GM over there, probably wants to bring him back, and he's not going to let him go for nothing. I'm sure he doesn't want to overpay for him, but that's certainly a possibility. Even the guy you mentioned earlier, Jarnell Stokes, is he somebody that Miami could bring back and kind of help mold, and he'd be relatively inexpensive. Is he a guy who can contribute at the NBA level?
I like Mirza Teletovic.
Teletovic.
Mirza Teletovic. Okay, I said it right the second time. He's a three-point shooter. He could do some stuff. He's 6'9", kind of got a big body. Irsan Ilyasova has a team option.
I don't think they're going to keep him there. I don't know. I don't know if he's a Vogel guy or not. I would say probably not.
I think he leaves, and he's an option as well. He's long. He can do some stuff handling the ball. Jeff Green, I'd hate to say it, but he played some stretch four for the Clippers this year. He's an option.
No, he's not.
He's not an option at all.
No, I've told him. He told him not to even consider Jeff Green.
Get the hell out of here. Yeah, I mean, there's some guys. Ryan Anderson, but it's unclear how much he's going to get paid. It looks like, you know, that the cat might be out of the bag with Ryan Anderson as far as how bad he is on defense, and he might not quite get that max deal that he was once expected to get.
I hear Kevin Durant's a free agent. He might be able to play the four.
He seems pretty good. He might be able, yeah.
I've heard he's a decent shooter. He might be able to be a game changer.
But he's not a champion, David.
Oh, you're right. He doesn't have that championship pedigree. Damn it. All right, well. You know, Pat Riley was willing to think outside the box when he brought that LeBron kid back in 2010. So maybe it might pay off again.
Either way, there's guys that are free agents that the Heat are going to have to sign. The Heat are going to have to sign some depth at that position. It's just how much cap room are they going to have, which is the first question. Is Chris Bosh playing? So do you need to sign somebody that is going to be a starter? But like I said, you're going to have to sign somebody that's willing to take a bench role and then understand that with the Bosh situation, they could be a starter and be ready for that moment and that responsibility. But I think we covered everything we had to. We're kind of running out of time on this segment.
Yeah, it's just there are, again, a lot of questions. Yeah. I mean, the health is of Chris Bosh is paramount, I think, and what they have to determine. And then, you know, how do you build your team moving forward? Is it a team that's going to be fast-paced? Is it going to be a little bit slower? You think fast-paced is the way the live will go, but that all depends on who you can build around. You know, Goran Dragic and presumably Hassan Whiteside if you're able to re-sign him. So it's a curious issue moving forward, but I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it today.
Me too. And this has been the Heat Check Podcast, a proud part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network on Blog Talk Radio. Subscribe to the Heat Check on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. And we'll catch you next time when we do small forwards. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Anonymous, been in corners with burners on us. Coming right a minute. Burka duffel, 100,000 in it. Hey, nigga, roll up. Anyway, do say mint with lemonade. Feeling good like I'm dealing yay. Moving to the day. Time limit never. Could do this shit forever. Can't even put it in words how I'm in love with her. From slanging work on the curb, hustling drugs with her. The jet ride, 50 million in one. Feeling, see, I'm high as a motherfucker. Don't have me shit, baby.
To celebrate summer, we're offering a free pair of flip-flops when you spend £35 on clothing, shoes, accessories, or beauty at M&S. Free those toes and strut into the sunshine. But hurry, this offer ends 4th of July. Only M&S. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply, subject to availability. See selected stores and online for details.